I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. It is Labor Day 2024, Monday, September 2nd. My name is Matt Pollard. The Colorado Rapids got a massive late win thanks to Yappy Hour in stoppage time. Erik ten Hag is not Harry Potter. And college football is back for those of us who care about the throw ball. Joining me now to talk about the Chudley Cannons of Major League Soccer, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
I don't know what that refers to.
You don't know what that means. The Chudley Cannons, Mark, are the Weasley's Quidditch team. They're the ones that they support. And they're a middling, to say the least of it. And I'm pretty sure, what are the Chudley Cannons' colors? Hold on. I'm pretty sure there's a reddish. It's more of an orangish. We got a Houston Dynamo look here going on, Mark. But there's they got some big cannons, and they're not a particularly good Quidditch team. I know we don't have a whole lot of Quidditch.
Is this like, do you think this is a reference to Arsenal? Like, what do you think the reference is?
So the Chudley Cannons are bad, Mark, and don't have a lot of history, and so that would be the parallel to the Rapids. No, they're the Rapids in this analogy. I know.
They don't have a lot of history. They're AFC Wimbledon. What you're saying they are. That's a deep cut for those of you. Go Google MK Dons versus AFC Wimbledon. It's a. Oh wait. Oh, Wimbledon's the good one. MK Dons is the bad one.
Yes.
Right. My bad, yo.
I know J.K. Rowling is originally from Wolverhampton. I don't know that she's a big footy fan, Mark. But so in any case, there's a Quidditch team that's the Wineteen Wanderers. So it's a play on Wolverhampton Wanderers. So. Yes, there's Quidditch club teams, and I guess the Colorado Rapids are the Chudley Cannons equivalent of that. Mark, did you see the ignominious punchline that Erik ten Hag delivered against himself after?
By the way, I just wanted to add in terms of random celebrities and random teams they support. It just so I was like you the fact that you knew that J.K. Rowling like Wolverhampton. I was like, I feel like Tom Hanks also has a random sports English football club.
He's Aston Villa.
And then I looked it up, and it was Aston Villa. And I was like, why does? But yeah, I remember seeing a little clip about it. But like, yeah, that's always a cool thing that like some Americans just randomly support.
According to Google, there is a Moose Jaw Meteorites, Mark, which I'm going to assume is Moose Jaw Canada.
Yeah.
And then we also, I know this because there's one of Slughorn's students who he tried to acquire at one point is a place for the Hollyhead Harpies. I think I remember they're particularly good. And I think the Wimborne Wasps were also very good. Lots of alliteration here. Colorado Rapids. Well, I guess that doesn't work.
There was a moment in England, in Canadian football, I think, where they were either two or three teams named the Stampeders, and then they like kind of like realized like that's dumb, let's not do that. So they were like, I think they were like the Manitoba Stampeders and the Calgary Stampeders. I was like, guys, it's not really that great a nickname. You don't need two of these teams anyway.
Okay, Mark, let's get back on point. Rabbi, you and
why?
I have sat.
But why? Why do we need to do that?
Because I don't think people care about our Harry Potter takes other than maybe Brian Jennings. And I did bring up J.K. Rowling, who increasingly is a controversial figure. And I'm not denying that. But so, Mark, did you see, you and I have sat through many a press conferences where coaches talk a lot, but don't necessarily say anything of substance. But then after Liverpool dismantling Manchester United at Old Trafford and Mohamed Salah scoring again in the Premier League play against Manchester United at Old Trafford, you had Erik ten Hag come out and he admitted, he said, I am not Harry Potter. I cannot just make our problems in midfield disappear. Despite this being his second, I think third year, maybe it's his second full season, I believe, with the Red Devils. Mark, what do we think about kind of the candidness and maybe the self-owning or the self-deprecation that managers and that players can engage in, and whether or not they it does the work that they think that it does in terms of taking the pressure off or acknowledging the reality of a problem, or are you just prompting more memes to exist, which is really the only reason soccer happens?
They can say whatever they want in the post game at some point. Like, I mean, at that level, it's more or less just about wins or losses. It's kind of amazing to me, though, that certain, for instance, American managers like Bob Bradley only got, like, I don't know, 6-8 weeks in the Premier League. And then guys like Eric Ten Hag get week after week with Manchester United being mediocre. I mean, I know that they haven't been as bad as Swansea was when Bob Bradley had them, but still. Jesse Marsh also did not get a lot of time in Europe before he was ejected. So I think the fun thing about being an English Premier League manager is that if you get the results, you can say whatever you want in the pressers, and also you cannot say anything in pressers. It was fun, you know, covering Arne Slot for two press conferences and being able to kind of sit there and see what they will say and what they won't say. I mean, Slot wasn't forthcoming. He was kind of like, if you are just tuning in for the first time to this podcast, yes, we do talk about the Colorado Rapids, and I am referring to the fact that earlier this summer, I had the blessed privilege of being able to cover Liverpool for Pittsburgh Soccer Now as they descended on these United States, and specifically this fair city of Pittsburgh, alongside the Monongahela, the Allegheny, and the Ohio Rivers. And just being that close with a Premier League manager was just a wonderful kind of experience. So, but they really do get to say whatever they want. And that's really kind of an amazing thing to witness.
Has Bob Lilly ever had a fighting at the bottom with a bottom group? What's the Bob Lilly zinger or soundbite that you'll remember?
He doesn't have too many, but I was just going to say the other manager that I got to that was interviewed at in the post game was Manuel Pellegrini, who was the manager for Real Betis. And I don't know, for those of you who are not soccer historians at this point, Pellegrini was the manager for Real Madrid under the Galacticos, and he famously did not get all those players to play on the same pitch at the same time successfully, and ultimately lost his job because of that. I did not ask about that. So Bob Lilly's famous for you open by asking him, Bob, what did you think of the game? And then he just talks for 9 minutes straight with no break, and he has no point. He usually talks about last game and next game and this game and tactics and all sorts of stuff that as a writer you can't use in the article. And so you just kind of sit there and wait for him to say something, kind of interesting, and then you write that down really quick and you throw it in there. But he meanders in such a way that there's no context to anything he says, so you get to take everything he says out of context. So Bob tends to say lots of those really great, soccer cliches. He tends to be a little bit honest, which is kind of funny. You'll say something it seems like the defense had a really good game. What did you think about your defense in this game? And he'll say, oh, they were terrible. This was not one of our better games. I was really disappointed in them. I think we need to do better. And you'd be like, what? I teed it up for you to give me a nice quote about your players and you passed. He's really famous for trashing his goalkeepers. I would say, he often, not only in verbally in the postgame, but also literally at the end of the season, no Bob Lilly goalkeeper has lasted more than two seasons. And last year, he had the Jamaican national team starting goalkeeper Jamali Waite as starting goalkeeper. And I think the team either didn't want to pay Jamali his money, or they were like, we could find someone better. And so they just moved on. I think the Riverhounds have often given other teams one of the best goalkeepers in the league for their season the year after we had him. We had two seasons ago the starting goalkeeper for Sacramento, who went all the way to the Open Cup final, had previously played for the Riverhounds, and it was like, guys, just hang on to a goalkeeper. It might work out well for us. I don't know. Anyway.
I would just like to point out, Mark, that had Pittsburgh Riverhounds held on to their goalkeeper in 2016 that they had on loan with Columbus Crew, they might currently have Zach Steffen in goal for them. Zach Steffen was on loan from Columbus Crew to the Pittsburgh Riverhounds in 2016, and according to his Wikipedia bio, he played 9 times for them, and apparently was not good enough for Bob Lilly to try and renew that loan. Granted, that's probably because Zach turned into the starter for Columbus in 2017.
That's what happened. We're famous for that. I told you my Abubakar story, right?
Lalas Abubakar was a Riverhound?
Oh, I can tell. I'll say even more. So Columbus Crew loaned Lalas to the Pittsburgh Riverhounds for a certain number of games in, like, I think 2016 or 2017 before I lived here. So flash forward, I do a bunch of interviews. I do a bunch of articles on the Riverhounds. One of them is about their assistant coach, now sporting director, whose name is Dan Visser. And, you know, a couple months go by, the off season I interview Visser for an article I do, and then the season goes on. We talk a bunch of times. I interview him, and then the off season comes. The beginning of the next season starts, and I'm over at training doing a preseason article. He says, "Hey, Mark, I got something for you." I'm like, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, come with me." I said, "Okay." So I go with him, and Visser says, "We were cleaning out one of our closets, and we were trying to get rid of a whole bunch of old stuff and jerseys and junk and all sorts of stuff. And I found this. I thought you might like it." And it was a Lalas Abubakar jersey from the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. And that's one of my kits that I have upstairs. So yeah, I've got
Michael Aziris sent you stuff. He never sent me a jersey. Yeah. He's clearly... he's showing his favorites, and
you'll get one. I mean, you're Burgundy Wave. Do an interview with a guy. Stay on top of him. Stay friends with him, and you'll get there. I promise you, you'll get the stuff.
I have three
player kits. I have those two, and then from the Rapids. If you don't know about this, you should, fans. I got the Rapids. By the way, if you're wondering, are we ever going to get to talking about soccer? Yes, we are, but there's not a lot of soccer to talk about because we don't have to preview a game. We only have to review Dallas. So if you're one of those fans, like, when are they going to get to the point? This is the point, ladies and gentlemen, and friends. I have 3 game worn kits. I have the Abubakar. I have the Azira. I don't know if they're game worn, but they're player kits from players. And then the third is Marlon Hairston. And Marlon Hairston comes from the fire sale that the Rapids do every winter. In the wintertime, I think it's usually usually around December, maybe. They announced to fans who were in the know, "Come to Dick's. We're going to clear out everything. We're going to get rid of all our stuff from last season. You can have anything you want for a song." So for, like, I think $65 or $80, a friend of mine got me a actual Marlon Hairston away kit, and it's yellow, which is rad, except he's a medium and I'm a large, so I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to wear this. So I think at the rate that I'm going, I'm going to have to gift it to my son, which is kind of a bummer because I really love that kit.
I know what I want. So, Mark, I have too much journalistic integrity to ask a guy currently playing or who I'm currently covering, current Rapids player or otherwise, for the shirt.
Obviously.
I think the plan here at this point is wait for Dom Baggi to retire and then get a shirt from Dom. I think that would be
good luck.
That would be my
good luck. Dom Baggi used to dodge every interview opportunity. I tried to interview him twice and he, like, ducked and disappeared before I could get to
him. He liked talking to me. He and I were cool.
Maybe he just doesn't like me.
Okay. Cool. Maybe
that's good.
I feel like if I asked Drew Moore right now for one,
for sure. The only problem with Drew Moore is that he's been out of the game long enough that he may not have any jerseys left from when he played. So, but yeah, get yourself a Drew Moore Dallas Burn jersey. That's what you want.
Ooh,
although he never played, he didn't play for the Burn. He played for FC Dallas.
Dallas.
I don't think they were Dallas Burn in his day. But
maybe I'd want a Toronto kit from Drew. Then I think that'd be a fun little white whale.
He'll hook you up. Ask for him.
All right. Okay, Mark. Let's get to the actual soccer that went on. Listeners, this past Saturday, the Colorado Rapids played at FC Dallas on Judgmental Jim's birthday. Happy birthday, Judgmental Jim. And they won by a score of 3-2, Mark. And Rabbi, I'm going to start off. This is my big thing or the big takeaway that I have. I'm going to start with it. I'm going to ask how much you like it. This might be the most boring 3-2 winner in the third minute of stoppage time game that we've ever seen. There were long stretches where this game was not interesting. There were long stretches where the Rapids were not particularly good. And the only thing that they did particularly well was stymie what FC Dallas was trying to do and failing to do. And there were moments where it was absolute chaos and ultimately it was successful. So I'll start off, Mark, by talking about the roster, because we knew from the availability report that Sam Bynes was out for this game. So Jackson Travis was starting, and this was his first start since, I wrote about this in Burgundy Wave, and I should have had this up beforehand. This was Jackson Travis's first start, Mark, since June 15th, which I believe was either that Vancouver game or that Houston game where they did some squad rotation, and maybe Sammy Bynes had a minor knock in any case. So it's been a while since we've seen Jackson Travis for the first team, and this is also, Mark, the first time since at Columbus Crew 2023, a game you were at with your eldest. That's the first time since May of 2023 in which Cole Bassett was healthy and eligible for selection and did not start a first-team competitive game for the Colorado Rapids. So almost, what, 15 months that it's been that Cole's been the de facto starter in midfield for the Rapids. So it was Sam Bynes, excuse me, it was Jonathan Lewis and Calvin Harris, who started up top in the wing. Georgi Mihailovic was, of course, in the 10. And ipso facto, ergo, with Cole Bassett out in the double pivot, it was Ollie LaRoz and Connor Ronan in the double pivot there. So we start off, Mark, and I thought the Rapids had good energy to start the game, but ultimately it was Dallas that scored on the first goal. There was a laser from midfield that Zach Steffen fumbled the bag on. I've heard at least one member of the goalkeeper's unit, Mark, saying that this goal was entirely on him. So he fumbles it straight to, who was the goal scorer? Farrington, the backup striker, because Dallas still had all of their DPs on the bench, even though they weren't listed on the availability report for this match, and he has a tap in. You then have almost the exact same situation, Mark, where Georgi Mihailovic plays to Calvin Harris. Calvin Harris, Mark, for a guy who did not get on the score sheet, might have been the best attacker for this Rapids team in this game, if you ask me. And that's saying a lot, given that Rafael Navajo had a brace in this match. In any case, Georgi finds Calvin Harris. Harris does a bunch of really good work, finds Navajo inside the box, kind of a redirect play, goes off of Martin Paz, the goalkeeper, and he's unable to collect the rebound, and Rafael Navajo has a tap-in header to make it 1-1. I would say then Dallas had the better of the chances in the first half, Mark, but I would say on the whole of the night, as we'll get to when I talk about some other statistics about the game, Dallas had had more chances, but had lower quality opportunities. The Rapids had higher chances, but fewer of those opportunities. Let's just talk about them now, since I think they're relevant. The shot attempts for the two teams, listeners, Dallas had more shot attempts, 21-14 for the Rapids, but then the shots on goal were 8-6 in favor of Colorado. And then XG, according to MLSsoccer.com, they changed it. This was different from what I had in my recap. It was 2.9 for the Rapids, but then 2.6 for FC Dallas. Let's take out the penalty, Mark, that Georgi Mihailovic missed in the second half of the game. And so you roughly had, what, that's 0.8. So the Rapids had 2.1 and Dallas had 2.6, but the Rapids did that on two-thirds the number of shots. So the Rapids were more clinical in transition with the opportunities they had. It was a very, they almost, the game plan for me, Mark, was so similar to what the Rapids have done in difficult games in League Cup, where they've been deferential at times from a possession standpoint, but then they look to control the game without having the ball, and they look to do more with less from a possession standpoint. And largely, I would say, in the moments where they had opportunities, they were effective. They weren't effective as often as you would like. They did not boss the game necessarily. In any case, we get to the 60th minute and Dallas decides that the game is in the balance and they need to try and force the issue. Pitar Musa comes on, Jesus Ferreira comes on, and moments after Zach Steffen made a great save on a open header off of a corner, Pitar Musa has a knockdown header. Really, really pretty goal from a transition standpoint in the 66th minute. The Colorado Rapids get back in the 76th. Georgi Mihailovic is fouled on a counterattack opportunity in the box. That's called a penalty. Georgi steps up to take it. He was 3-for-4 on pens. He ended up being 3-for-5 as Paz made the save. But then the rebound went to the side of the box, and Cole Bassett and Georgi Mihailovic, Cole Bassett and Rafael Navajo, crashed that box after the rebound. Bassett had subbed into the game at that point, and then Bassett sets up Navajo for a tap-in, and it's kind of going back and forth, Bark, and a bunch of the teams are getting good opportunities, but not necessarily doing anything with those opportunities. Sebastian Legette could have had a brace in this match on another night, and ultimately it was just going to come down to, I think, who ultimately finished their opportunity, and lo and behold, who had Darren Yapi scoring in the 93rd minute, dink over the top from Georgi Mihailovic. Yapi pressing the back line, he gets to it first, and he just chips the goalkeeper, and the ball slowly rolls into the goal, and the Rapids win the game. Mark, let me start with your good things from the match.
Well, they certainly scored some banger goals and some really exciting goals. I mean, I think that rebound by Hoffa off of the Calvin Harris pass to the center was a super wonderful one. That was a great opportunity, well taken. Darren Yapi's play was also a fantastic one. The other thing is, I think you said it really, really well. This was, I think, for a lot of Rapids fans who maybe mostly catch who catch highlights of some games and watch other games, this was not the world's most exciting game. I think the reason that happens, and it particularly happens with Rapids games, is that the team isn't necessarily, especially in this game, they weren't really pressing high frequently and looking to make that that turnover, and they weren't trying to strike in transition, or if they were, they were kind of like loping big balls over the top and then not connecting with them, meaning a lot of this game was, you know, recover the ball, pass it around the back three or four times, work it forward, then get into a, you know, the opposition has 10 men behind the ball in the final third, and then work it around, and then clip in a half cross, and then, you know, turn it over. Like, there was a lot of that. There were a lot of possessions where it was either, you know, a big ball over the top that doesn't connect, followed by a turnover, or a work it up the field very slowly and then don't wind up with a shot. And those aren't particularly exciting games. A low overall number of shots, I think, for both teams, and particularly not a lot of like dribble drive attacking action. And the highlights made it seem like there was a lot of that, because there were like, I don't know, six shots that came out of one of those scenarios, but none of them were that. I do think the Peter Musa goal was really, really lovely, although that's not a Rapids good thing. And I also think the good thing, you said it really well, that Zach Steffen kicked it at the beginning, his failed save on that first play that resulted in a goal pretty much was on him, but he turned it around for the rest of the game. And so I think that kind of like rebounding from a bad early performance and keeping your head on straight and having a good game is really important. So overall, the Rapids persisted. I did think, by the way, Georgi Mihailovic had a very, very good game. He got hacked down a couple times from behind, but overall, like, he would whip through a ball and he would make the run, and he was just very active and aggressive and following the ball a lot. This was also, this is maybe more for big thing as opposed to good thing, but it was notable to kind of say, you know, last week when I talked about this game, I said, you know, the Rapids, you know, maybe coming off of a big tournament, they may be tired, they may not be up for this one. They were up for this one, but they did rotate Cole Bassett out of the match. He started on the bench, and I don't think he came in at all.
He did. He subbed in.
He did. He came in. I didn't notice.
Yeah. He had the assist to Hoffa after the missed penalty.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't. I blanked on that. But yeah, so that was a really like interesting move. I mean, Bassett has been kind of like their 90-minute man, you know, every game kind of goer type guy. Jackson Travis looked okay. You know, it wasn't overwhelming. And I think the last thing I'll say, and then if there's, you know, we'll switch to bad things and big thing, but like, and this is not about the Rapids, but like last week, I think I mentioned specifically that I really like Nkosi Tafari at center back. Boy, he did not have a good game. I mean, he was culpable on the penalty, and he was the man marking Darren Yapi when Yapi broke through for the game winning goal. So if you go back and watch Nkosi Tafari to see all the plays, he's kind of at fault. The interesting thing about that is I was looking up, as we get to our final segment, players for the USMNT who are getting looks, because I think this week is the week where the call-ups for the USMNT are going to be not necessarily the regulars, the players in Europe who are likely to be at the next World Cup, but more likely young guys who they kind of want to start like working into the mix to say, maybe you're the guy in a couple of years from now. Nkosi Tafari has a cap, maybe not a cap, but has a call up to the USMNT. And that's surprising because he's great. He's a great player. This was not one of his better games, though. So,
yeah. I do want to bring up one really good stat, Mark. I found this, Jason Maxwell, friend of the show. He said this earlier, so I'll tag this on with good thing, Mark, and then that'll lead into my bad thing. This was, this game was similar and emblematic of the Rapids League Cup form in that they didn't necessarily have their best stuff. It wasn't, there were long stretches. I would say, Mark, is this the first like boring game the Rapids have had in about 2 months? Is that a fair assessment? Like there were long stretches where I was not engaged with this game, just with the way the run of play was going. So it was a game of moments, and it was a game where the Rapids match winners needed to show up, and if they did that, they would have been good. Mitchell Carroll had a really good point when we did the mega pod after the RSL game, where he commented that the Rapids won that third game, the third leg of the Rocky Mountain Cup, against RSL with 3 to 4 guys playing at a very high level and other guys being average but not making a big mistake that necessarily cost the team. Like, I don't know that Connor Ronan's had a great game in the last couple of months, Mark. I would say he made a couple really good slide tackles against some of the Mexican teams. I will say that. Like, there were long, like, Andreas Maxu has had, no, Maxu's been good. But you know, the Rapids have rarely had a game where both of their wingers have been good. For example, they've rarely had games where both of the players in their double pivot are particularly good, and that's in any combination of the three: Bassett, Ronan, and Oliver LaRoz. But when the Rapids match winners have been great, or they've been great in the moments in which they needed to be. I don't know that Rafael Navajo was particularly elite in any of the Leagues Cup games that he played, but he scored big goals that needed to be scored. Darren Yappe, Mark, we can say now he's scored 3 goals in 12 games since opening his MLS account. One of them was garbage time against St. Louis. Two of them are match winners, Mark. One of them was the winner against Toluca in stoppage time, and then now 3 points for the Rapids. I would say, Mark, that's a net positive. We can say that Darren Yappe, you know, given where our expectations were for him earlier this season, like coming into the season, Mark, I think we would have just thought, like, just score a goal, like start with scoring a goal and we'll go from there. I think we've now found something in what he's capable of doing, regardless of the goal scoring. And if we're turning stoppage time into Gordo time into Yappe hour, I am absolutely here for it. But so here's the tweet from Jason Maxwell. Mark, so Navajo is now on 13 goals in MLS play, I believe. Navajo is on pace for 16.4 goals. The club record was Diego Rubio in 2022 with 16 goals. Mihailovic is on pace for 25.2 goal contributions, goals plus assists, and the club record is 23, also set by Diego Rubio in 2022. The club record for assists overall, you want to guess who this was and in what year it took place, Mark?
What?
Legendary player, some of the best hair in the history of the game. South American player. Fantastic hair. Played with Marcelo Balboa.
Oh, Valderrama.
Carlos Valderrama in 2002 set the club record in MLS play with 16 assists. Mark, I feel pretty confident in saying that all 3 of those records are going to be broken. I think now we'll still be able to say 23 goal contributions. I will say if Georgie gets to 24 goal contributions, so he surpasses what Diego Rubio does, and that is in a successful regular season. So, I mean, they'd be making the playoffs at this point, which is something that Diego Rubio's 2022 Rapids team did not do. Then I think we're 2 years removed, Mark, from the single greatest individual offensive output in Colorado Rapids history. We will have shattered that entirely. And that first year with Diego Rubio gone from the club as well. So to get to this point here, Mark, I would say Georgi Mihailovic is a match winner. Cole Bassett is a match winner. Zach Steffen is a match winner against all but the top two or three teams in MLS. So we'll say LAFC, Columbus, and take your pick from the next, Inter Miami. That's the third one. And those three guys against anybody else can show up, be elite on the field, be competent with their opposite number, and can help the Rapids win the games. I would say that Rafael Navajo is next on that list. I would say that he's a tier down. We have seen Navajo not score goals, or we have seen him do the dirty work to then make life easier offensively for Georgi, for Cole. And if everybody else just gives you sixes and sevens, Mark, and doesn't fumble the bag at the back post, like, you know, if Lawless Abubakar doesn't slip on a banana peel and leave things open for a Dennis Bawanga to run in on goal and score, if Keegan Rosenberry doesn't miss his mark or whatever, if Connor Ronan doesn't give up a penalty, then the Rapids are okay. So a good thing that I have, Mark, is that the Rapids have found ways to get results when not everybody's playing particularly well. I still have concerns that, like, four or five guys maybe didn't, despite playing eight games in August in which they finished third in the CONCACAF Leagues Cup, qualify for CONCACAF Champions Cup, and get an MLS win against a resurgent FC Dallas team who's coming off of a new coach bump and everything. There's a bunch of guys who can play a lot better, and if they do, when they do come up on that road game at LAFC, at LA Galaxy, I'm going to feel way more confident about what they can do. And so that's still a concern that I have. They have plenty of time against worse teams to figure it out. I've kind of covered my bad stuff. Mark, you kind of already covered your big thing. Any bad thing, or do we just want to be happy for Darren Yapi more?
It was another game where I think the defensive, there was a big miss from Ollie LaRaz. There was kind of a bit of invisibility from Connor Ronan, although they shielded well for stretches of the game. But I do think that, like, this dual double pivot of redheads is still not my favorite, and I don't think you can win an MLS championship with the two of them back there. And I just want to see more out of them, I think LaRaz not finishing at the level of a regular midfielder because he's a defensive midfielder is okay. I do think that, like, I'm moving in the direction of thinking about off-season upgrades, and I'm looking at that position and thinking, like, that's a place where we might want to do some differences. Another player that was mostly quiet in this game was Johnny Lewis. We know this. Like, Johnny Lewis blows up every third to fifth game. You know, he's good for five goals a season. He'll start 25 games a year. If you start him 25 games a year or 15 games a year, but he's going to be mostly invisible, minus a couple of really, really, you know, speedy runs where he throws in the shimmies and the tricks and then whatever, and then he blasts it way over the net. And so there was a bit of that from Johnny Lewis this game. You know, live by the sword, die by the sword. That's who this guy is, and we're basically okay with that at this point in our season. We kind of understand that that's just the nature of the beast, the way we kind of understand it. In this match, just to be specific, Lewis was given a 6.8 rating by FootMob. He was 6 for 9 on passes, generated 0.24 expected goals, which isn't bad. He had one shot that was blocked in the game, but mostly kind of a quiet day out of him. And I think there was a little bit more spark and a little bit more noise coming out of Calvin Harris. So this is one of those games where you make an argument for why Cole Bassett might want to start kind of over there on that left side opposite him. But this is the one position on the field that we're kind of like missing, you know, where if we have Calvin Harris and Kevin Cabral with Georgi Mihailovic in the middle of this field, I think we've got maybe our best lineup of wide midfielders, center midfielders. What we don't have is really any other options besides him. You know, Omir Fernandez hasn't quite figured it out there. Johnny Lewis hasn't quite figured it out there. He's had a couple good games, but, you know, it's still kind of an open position at this point.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Mark, you know, this is a game where, especially in periods where the Rapids didn't have the ball, not having Kevin Cabral particularly hurt. You know, how many of those offensive transition plays did we see where Maxu or Georgi Mihailovic or Cole, when he came on, put Calvin Harris in a good position, and Calvin had space to run forward into, but then nothing developed was available for him because guys were further back deep because of the defensive posture that the Rapids were setting up to try and be compact and limit what Dallas did, especially in the final 30 minutes once they had all of their DPs on. You know, it was a bit of a concern. And that's where having a Kevin Cabral would have been really helpful, Mark. The goal that Peter Musa scored, which was kind of a quick, you know, flash in the pan counterattack situation. Not saying that Lawless Abubakar was entirely in fault on that, but we know Moise Bombito is faster than Lawless. So maybe Moise's speed, you know, he gets there a second faster, challenges the cross, challenges the pass or something, and maybe that affects play. So on the goal conceded, on the second goal conceded, I think certainly the Rapids missed Moise. And in offensive sequences and in possession, I think particularly not having Kevin Cabral, not having Cole Bassett start this game for the first 60 minutes was also something that they missed, which kind of leads me to my next point, Mark, of the, you know, to your point about Jackson Travis looked okay. Like, there were a few sequences where Rouen really skinned him, and that was something that Dallas clearly was trying to attack and go at. But, you know, it wasn't like the Rapids were able to account for that and get over that. But, you know, we've both been critical of Sam Vines when the Rapids are building possession-wise and Vines tries to do too much in the midfield or in the final third and ends up giving up a really bad turnover that then leads to an attacking sequence for the opponent. And I thought Jackson Travis kept it relatively simple from a possession standpoint. And if that's all that he needs to be, Mark, for, you know, they've got 2 weeks now. Chris Armas gave the team the entire week off. They've got no training this calendar week, Mark. But, you know, if that's time for Sam Vines' hamstring to get better, I'm going to feel better about that. But if it's Jackson Travis starting against Portland, maybe that's not necessarily the worst thing going on. Mark, anything else that we want to say? I feel like I've said everything about this Dallas game. Shall we move on? Okay, Mark is nodding. Mark, do we briefly want to talk about the Portland game? I know we've mentioned it briefly. Let me just look at the standings because there's not going to be an MLS game affecting the standings for either of these two teams. Colorado Rapids are still fourth in the Western Conference. They've got 44 points off of 27 games played. Portland did not play this past weekend, I believe. No, they did. Who did they play? I remember they got I saw a Vander scored a crazy goal. Just
to be clear, fans, this game is on September 14th. This is 2 weeks away.
Yes. Oh, so, okay, excuse me. It was Mosquera who scored in the 55th minute, and that got them a 1-0 win over Seattle Sounders. So, big Cascadia victory for the Timbers at home, Mark. So, Timbers are now sitting off of 40 points, 4 points behind the Rapids on 27 games played. And then Rapids' home record at Dick's Sporting Goods Park this year is 8-2-3, and Portland on the road this year is 3-7-3. Mark, we can talk about the Mark Bodmer line. Rabbi, do you want to guess how many points it took for you to finish ninth in the Western Conference last year?
To finish ninth?
Yes.
38?
Higher. It's in the 40s.
Well, yeah, it's usually in the 40s, but sometimes you can slip in. 43.
It was 43 or 44. I can't remember which. But in any case, Mark, we can now officially say the Mark Bodmer line is officially...
Why is it the Mark Bodmer line?
It's the fan Mark Bodmer who came up with this metric, Mark, a few years ago. Jason Maxwell or Eric Stinson would know more about this than me. But effectively, the question was, however far the Rapids were in the season, how many games that they had left to go, and then what's the points per game they needed the rest of the way in order to make the playoffs. So when the Rapids started off really, really bad, you know, we'd look at the Mark Bodmer line and we'd see that it, you know, you needed to play at a Supporters Shield winning clip. We would say, okay, the Rapids are probably missing the playoffs. In 2016 and in 2021, when the Rapids were playing really, really poorly, we were seeing that, you know, you could have an average or slightly below average points per game the rest of the way, and okay, with a third of the way through the season, we figured the Rapids were going to make the playoffs. So right now, Mark, the Rapids are on 44 points. So if it's according to last year,
but if we get negative 1 points the rest of the way, we're probably still safe.
Yes. So if
that was a thing, which is only a thing in England when you get a financial deduction for going into like administration or something like that.
I don't know that there's ever been a points deduction in Major League Soccer. I don't know that that's ever happened. So in any case,
listeners, that's a good thing. You keep talking. I'm going to look it up.
Yes. So in any case, listeners, according to last year's stats, the Colorado Rapids could lose every single game the rest of the season and still qualify for the playoffs. The benefit is now they've got seven games left. They've got some home games. They've got games against mostly bad teams, and if the Rapids continue to win those games, they will finish far above the playoff line and have a very good seed and possibly have some home field advantage, and that's something to look forward to. I still think, Mark, there's a little bit... I don't know that they're catching... It's going to be difficult for them to catch more than one team above them right now, Rabbi. LAFC has a couple games in hand, and they've got more points. So LA Galaxy are on 52 points off of 28 games played, so the Rapids have a game in hand on them. But even still, that's an 8-point lead that the G's have. And then LAFC is on 47 points off of 25 games played. So LAFC is 3 points ahead, and they have 2 games in hand on the Rapids. They're probably not catching them. But we've seen, Mark, that RSL has slid down recently. They didn't end the month of July particularly well. They haven't come back great since Leagues Cup as well, and they've had some squad rotation because they sold Gomez, they brought some players in, and it's going to take them time for Pablo Mastroeni to figure things out, and maybe that doesn't necessarily lead to results. They've had some bad performances and some bad points dropped at home as well, which isn't a good sign for them. So, Mark, I think it's plausible. I could understand a Rapids fan being bullish that the Rapids will get 3 points more than RSL the rest of the way, with the two teams having the equal number of games played, and they will be able to surpass them. That being said, you also have Vancouver, who's in fifth right now off of 41 games played and has 2 games in hand on the Rapids. So if they get a win and a draw, then they're ahead of the Rapids the rest of the way. So there's some juggling to go on this, Mark. I have a hard time believing the Rapids finish lower than sixth. I think it is very plausible, nay, even likely, that the Rapids could end up finishing third. I think they'll be somewhere in there. Fourth, fifth, I think is the most likely outcome, Mark. I would be happy. I would be content with that. I think that would be a reasonable, the Rapids would be finishing in a chalk position. They would deserve a fourth or a fifth seed in the MLS Western Conference. But so, Mark, we're looking at Portland, who have come out and continued to play good at home. They haven't made any significant signings since the last time these two teams played each other. Just the big question that I have on this, Rabbi, how much of the 2 games that they've played between each other, one a 4-1 win for Portland, one a 4-0 win for Portland. How much of that was maybe what Portland was doing tactically? How much of that was just episodic of the Rapids just having 2 really bad games and it just so happened to be in the same stadium against the same opponent? Is there something to what Portland is doing against the Rapids that is somehow their Achilles heel? Or is just Providence Park, you know, the elephant graveyard and a place that the Nerve are supposed to go to, and Providence Park and BMO Stadium are the two places that are horrible for the Rapids, and if they play those two teams at home, they're able to get something against them. I think we're going to learn something, Mark, about the Rapids, or we're going to get a data point relative to what these two previous games were against Portland about the Rapids on the 14th. I'm not prepared to say one way or another what the result is going to be, given that the team's going to have a week off, and we'll see where they are from an injury standpoint. Rabbi, your initial, you know, too far out thoughts on Portland?
I think maybe we finally beat them. I don't know. I mean, I think I owe it up to straight voodoo that they keep pummeling us. You know, it's 4-0, 4-0. I think you're also your point of it was an away game both times that the Portland Trailblazers, the Portland Timbers beat us. Means that when we play them in Colorado, we will have the upper hand. I feel like Portland, I could be misremembering, but I feel like, you know, based on snow games and kind of even summer midseason matches, I feel like Portland Colorado matches at the Dick are really good matches, that they tend to be really exciting. They have a lot of theatrics. They feel really dramatic. So this is fourth place Colorado versus sixth place Portland. There is a lot to play for in this match. Portland kind of trying to solidify a position for the rest of the season. This is a classic 6-pointer because both teams are in the Western Conference, and it's a big match for both teams in terms of where they sit in the table. Colorado having a few matches left to go in the season, and really trying potentially to get into position here where they can really, you know, maybe stay in fourth place in the table is all we're really looking forward to. But like even moving up would be a good thing. So our remaining matches coming up: Portland, Sporting Kansas City away, Toronto at home, Minnesota away, LA Galaxy at home, Seattle Sounders at home, and Austin FC away. That LA Galaxy matchup is going to be a huge match. And for Rapids fans, it's a Wednesday match, but it's going to be a great opportunity to see the best team in Major League Soccer, who doesn't have a player named Lionel Messi, on display. And it's another opportunity for Colorado to kind of figure themselves out and try and get a shot here and do their thing. So all over, it's a really great match, and it should be a lot of fun for the Rapids to play Portland. We've talked extensively about Portland's personnel, but I do think that their success up till this season, especially against the Rapids, has transcended personnel to some degree. We've all said good things about Mason Toy. We've all said good things about Maxime Crépeau, the ageless Diego Chara. And at this point, I think we've mentioned him and kind of like talked about him as having a young player, as having potential, being quixotic, being up and down. But Anthony, as it's properly pronounced, has just properly slayed the Rapids. I believe he has 2 goals in each of the 4-0 wins that the Rapids had.
I think it's 2-1, Mark.
Matt says it's 2-1, but that's nonetheless, he scored in both the games he's played against the Rapids. So he's straight murder for us. We should just triple team him and hope we can stop him. Those are my thoughts on Portland.
Yeah, we'll see where the injury report's at, because I think that would affect potentially Sam Vines. And then also, Mark, Kamani Stewart-Baines missed this game with another illness, and he had a bit of a sickness earlier on in the season as well. So I don't know if we need to get him on like a vitamin C regimen or something. We need to get KSB healthy, and that further belies the issues that we've seen at the winger position. Last thing that we've got here, Rabbi, let's talk about the U.S. Men's National Team roster. Austin Trusty, former Burgundy boy, former Gunner as well, Mark, made a recent move from the Blades, who are now in the championship. They got relegated, and Austin Trusty was a starter for them last year when they were in the Premiership. He's made a move to Celtic, where he's presumably going to be a starter and a big player. They're going to be playing on the front foot, a lot of possession stuff. Something that he hasn't necessarily had outside of, I would say, maybe a summer stretch of home games in 2021. So that'll be a good test for him, Mark. And look, Celtic's a big club, bigger than Sheffield United as well. So he's getting an opportunity at center back, and maybe that's a little bit up for grabs right now. We'll see what Pochettino thinks, if Pochettino actually is happening. But Mark, also worth pointing out that Zach Steffen did not make this call up as well. It was a fairly chalky group that came in. Ethan Horvath is in that group, and Matt Turner, who made a move to, is he at Nottingham? No, he's at Crystal Palace now. Am I remembering that correctly? Where did Matt Turner go on loan here, Rabbi? Turner, yes, he's with Crystal Palace on loan, and he's just not a starter, Mark. And this is what, going into the second full season where he's expected to be a backup. And this was after him being really, really good on loan for a couple of teams, after moving away from Arsenal. And I think that's really disappointing for me, Mark, given how well Zach Steffen had played coming out of Leagues Cup. If there was an MLS guy you were going to call up, it was going to be him or Patrick Schulte. You ended up calling up Patrick Schulte. I understand that, given what he's done for Columbus in the last year and obviously winning Leagues Cup. But I have to think, Mark, you know, if nothing else, Zach Steffen deserves to start one of those January cupcake camp games, you know, a home game at the Diggity against Panama. But Mark, your thoughts on the USMNT roster as we're in limbo waiting for Poch to get announced? Thoughts on Trusty and thoughts on Steffen getting snubbed, or was it not a snub?
I mean, I think Jedi Robinson being off this roster gives the U.S. men's national team an opportunity to try some other guys there. This guy Marlon Fossey for Standard Liège, and this other player Christopher Lund for Palermo, are 2 guys who are just outside of my frame of reference, and that kind of happens all the time in these kind of mid-season opportunities. I think that that's an interesting, those are interesting choices. Gaga Slonina being omitted. I think the goalkeeper position specifically is a spot where there are a lot of guys who you could have had. Slonina is one of them. The kid for Orlando, whose name escapes me right now, who's had a couple good games last season for them, also seemed like an omission. This might be unpopular, but, and it's probably more about personality than it is about talent, but I'm not super thrilled about Gio Reyna being in on this team. I mean, I just don't know what we're getting out of him. He's up, he's down. He's got a good attitude, he's got a bad attitude. He's healthy, he's not healthy. I kind of just want the guy to put his head down and play 6 months of regular quality soccer for his club and then force his way into the USMNT rather than be named because he's talented, he's good, and he's at a position that we really need. You know, there's a couple other players that I would like to see. Tim Weah, Tyler Adams, and Weston McKinney. I always want to see them play. I think two are hurt and one is getting rest from what I've read. So those are all kind of interesting moves. The last thing I'll say is something that I think we've all been thinking for a very long time, which is that we just really still look soft at forward. I don't believe Brendan Aaronson, who is listed as a forward, is really a forward. He's more of a wing or a midfielder. Josh Sargent is, I don't know. I have yet to be convinced that Josh Sargent is a solution for this team at center forward. I definitely feel that way after the World Cup with Haji Wright. He doesn't light the world on fire for me. And Florin Balogun is a really, really fun player. But he has yet to kind of claim that mantle either. There are just so many players there where there were so many men's national team strikers and starters and forwards who, if they were healthy, if they were, you know, more consistent, more regular, like I'm thinking like Jordan Morris in his prime, that would be ideal up there, but we don't have that option. And so we're still weak at that position. So I really feel like that's the biggest kind of place where we're lacking. Nice to see Tim Ream back in. The old man stands in. Looks like he's going to be on the U.S. men's national team until you and I are bouncing little grandchildren off our knees.
Yeah. Last thing that I'll say on the USMNT roster mark, there was another goalkeeper who was called in, Diego Cochen, K-O-C-H-E-N. Not sure about the pronunciation there. He is a 2006 goalkeeper. He was with the Barcelona Academy, and he is now with Barça B in, I think, the third or the fourth division in Spain. And he's been a part of the U19 and the U17 setup. I believe, Mark, there was some call-up, some tournament or something that happened in CONCACAF where he and Adam Beaudry were competing for minutes or going back and forth with the youth setup as well. So I can understand, you know, I can understand bringing in a guy who has some European connection, maybe just to give them a look, or if it's some guy that, you know, the interim manager had a connection with. Like, I don't think that, like, that fourth goalkeeper spot, you're not necessarily missing something out on. So I think it's an easy argument, Mark, to make that really Zach Steffen was competing with Horvath, Schulte, and Turner. And while I don't like it, I agree with the logic that if you're calling up one of the two between Patrick Schulte and Zach Steffen, you give it to Patrick Schulte, given that he is on the Columbus Crew and they just won a major trophy and they've been playing fantastic football with him at goal pretty much all season long. I do not understand how you have two European goalkeepers who were not good enough in the Copa America this summer and who are not starters or match fit right now, playing well as match fit goalkeepers, why you would pick him, either of them, over a Zach Steffen, given what Zach just did in Leagues Cup and what he's done for the Rapids progressively over the course of the last 2 or 3 months. But who knows? We'll see what Potch has to do. We'll see what happens in January camp. Mark, anything else, or shall we land this plane?
Just the last thing is that Potch isn't coaching this match, right?
Yes, Potch is not official yet. So it's the what's the interim manager's name who was on staff for Greg Berhalter previously?
Mikey Varas.
That sounds right.
I'm looking at it. He's the U20 coach.
Okay. So then I can understand why he then calls in Diego Cochen, given the connection they might have had at the U20 level. So in any case. Mark, anything else?
Let's get the heck out of here. And then I'm going to be probably solo potting this next week. There will be no pod next week because there will be nothing to talk about because there's no game this coming Saturday. But the week after that, while Matt is in Tanzania building pit latrines, something like that.
Pit latrines, toilets.
Engineers Without Borders. This guy is a national and international hero. He's making the world a better place while I sit on my fat, lazy butt in my basement in Colorado, eating bonbons, making, bad podcasts and so on and so forth. But when I'll do one podcast while Matt's away to review the Portland game and preview the SKC game. I'll see if I can book us a guest star to interview and to talk a little bit. And that's about all I got for you. Matt has to remind, I'm saying this out loud. Matt has to remember to send me the intro music, the audio for that tonight so that I, can slip it in to the Believe broadcast. So I apologize for what mayhem and chaos will, take place in the week while Matt is gone. So no pod next week at this time, and, you'll be back with me and whichever victim I submit to this podcast 2 weeks hence.
You did a really good job with Joseph Samuelson while I was away for the wedding in Maine in 2022, Mark. So there's that potentially.
Thanks, man.
That's available.
I do okay.
Yes. So, listeners, I am flying. This will be 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday, September 3rd. I'll be taking the longest nonstop flight available out of Denver International Airport, Turkish Air. 13 hours to Istanbul, then Istanbul to Dar es Salaam, the capital of Tanzania, and then I'll be on a local puddle jumper from Tanzania to Mwanza, and I'll be in the Bulawayo neighborhood area, working at a primary school, building pit latrines out there for the female students that we have there. I'll be out there for 2 weeks. Super, super excited to do this. Convenient that we scheduled this over the international break, Mark, so I'm only missing maybe two or three games. We will see. I will be back in country. I'll be back in country by the time the SKC game is happening on the road. We'll see where I'm at from a jet lag standpoint. And I will not be able to cover in person the home game against Toronto FC. And obviously it'll be 3 a.m. for me, I think, local time in Tanzania for the Portland game. So I will not be watching that game live. As far as I'm concerned, that game will not exist. And when the Rapids inevitably lose that match 4-0, 4-1, 4-2, I will be grateful for that. And I apologize to all the Rapids fans who will have to sit through that in person. Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter, on X, at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96Podcast. You can email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. You can support us financially and find Mark's written work and get our merch at our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. You can find all of my written work at burgundywave.com. And tell your favorite Harry Potter nerd fandom friend about us. Tell your favorite wizarding person about us. Convert a friend in your life who is secretly a wizard, who is a fan of a Quidditch team, and get them interested in the actual Worlds game, in the Muggles Worlds game, and convert them into a Colorado Rapids fan. Find a Chudley Cannon supporter and turn them into a Burgundy believer. Happy birthday to Judgmental Jim. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And listeners, Mark will see you real soon, and I will be back bleary-eyed, and jet lagged and completely filled with energy from helping people in the global south, hopefully the week after Toronto FC.
Peace.